Let's bring in our guest for this hour, Sandra Steingraber, who is a scientist, a biologist, an activist, an author. Good morning, Sandra. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. You know, I ain't Bill Moyers. But I'll do my best. Sandra was on the program about 3 years ago. It was almost exactly 3 years ago when your documentary came out based on the book, Living Downstream. Since then, you've written a couple of other books based on your family and the connection of your family to your environmental efforts.
That's right. And I guess the part of my autobiography I'd love to highlight today is that I'm an Illinois native. In fact, I grew up not far from Flanagan, a little town that you just mentioned in regards to tar sands. So I'm a downstate Illinois girl through and through, and I grew up along the East Bluff of the Illinois River and was part of a cancer cluster that I wrote about in Living Downstream. I was diagnosed with bladder cancer at the age of 20, which is a disease with very strong links to the environment. Questions by my own diagnosing physician about my environmental exposures led me to not go to medical school, but rather pursue a career in public health. My adoptive mother was diagnosed with cancer at about the same time, so we were actually co-cancer patients together. And that story, as well as the story of the excess rates of cancer in downstate Illinois associated with various industries, was part of the book Living Downstream, and then the film that was based on the book, for which I appeared on your show. And then subsequent to that, I very joyfully married and became a mother of two. Didn't know I could even have children, so that was a miraculous thing for me. And so I turned my scientist's attention to threats to our children's health. And the biggest one of all environmental threats is climate change. And that's just not my conclusion. It's the conclusion of the World Health Organization as well. I'm interested in writing about it and talking about it to other parents. Like, given that this threat is affecting not, you know, any more theoretical future generations, but the kids that sit across the dinner table from us every night, and given that it's our job as parents to protect our children from harm, what are we supposed to do? And I have very specific ideas in places where tar sands and fracking operations are moving into our communities.
That is such an interesting point, the idea of children. And by the way, I should say that one of my team members here in the studio, Carol Brewer, has a brother who lives in the Pekin area. Is that right, Carol?
Yeah, that is right. He's been living there probably 10 years with his wife and daughter, teenage daughter. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it's still my favorite place in the world. There's nothing, I think, more beautiful than the Illinois River Valley. You know, from the house where I grew up, you could look in one direction and see farm fields, and some of those actually belong to my family, members of whom still farm there. And in the other direction, you see this amazing river, once the most productive inland river in North America in terms of fish. That's all gone now because of chemical pollution. But there's the river still has a kind of spirit, and so I'm always glad to come back to Illinois, and I'm thrilled to be part of the Chicago Bioneers, just so I can be part of that, my beloved state of Illinois again.
Yeah, I'm glad you're there, and actually, you and I are on the same panel workshop.
That's right. You're the moderator.
I am the moderator, so I'm going to have to, you know, I'll keep you guys all in line. Actually, you and your other members of the panel are going to be doing the heavy lifting, because we'll be breaking out into sessions with groups of people at tables and really trying to come up with real world solutions for the problems that we face, which seem overwhelming. And it gets back to what you just said about your children and sitting across from the table from them and trying to figure out what kind of a world they're going to grow up in. I was looking at one of your talks, and I can't remember which one exactly on video. And you said that you thought that between the time now where you're working as an activist and when your children are old enough to be to work as activists, that there will be a movement that will address these issues. That seems rather positive to me, and I worry about these things. I don't have children, so it makes me wonder why people would bring them into this world that is under so much threat from so many directions. What I'm asking is, are you really that positive a person, and do you think we can address these and make changes necessary?
I do, Mike, and I said that as a statement I made at the Bioneers Conference in, I believe, 2008, and so then that particular part of my speech was captured and put in the film, so it's continues to echo. Subsequent to then, in the last 5 years, there's been an uprising of citizens to confront all these extreme energy projects that we see, which are being advocated by our own Department of Energy, and are threatening the ability of our planet to sustain life. So our own energy policies are on a collision course with the conditions needed for us to raise our children. And so in response now, you see, I think I was right, I guess is what I'm saying, is that I anticipated that there would be this very powerful environmental human rights movement. And in the intervening years, we've seen the emergence of groups like 350.org, who are taking on the pipeline in ways that they were told when they started that, look, this is a done deal. Why you're just wasting your effort and shouting into the wind. But in fact, now it's not at all clear that tar sands pipeline, at least the part of it that remains to be constructed, is going to tip forward. And then we also see a remarkable change just in the last half year in public opinion around so-called fracking, the technique by which we use water as a club to shatter the shale bedrock of the nation in order to blast out bubbles of methane and create over inventories of natural gas. So 6 months ago, when they polled people, most people had a kind of favorable view of fracking, probably influenced by the ubiquitous television commercials about clean, green natural gas, which are highly misleading. But now we see, according to the latest poll done by Pew, that public opinion has turned against this. And we see that replicated by other polls in state after state. Here in upstate New York, where I live, we live atop a motherload of methane, and all kinds of promises have been promulgated by the world's biggest industry about the riches that lie under our feet if we'll only get out of the way and let them turn the earth inside out and have at it. A couple of years ago, most people thought that was probably a good idea. Now, most people think that's a terrible idea. And we've maintained, against all odds, a moratorium on fracking in the state of New York for 5 or 6 years, and we're working very hard on turning that into a ban. Just yesterday, the highest court in France ruled constitutional France's own ban on fracking. The oil and gas industry had challenged it on the grounds that it was unconstitutionally interfering with property rights and so forth, and the highest court just ruled that, in fact, a ban on fracking was a legitimate way to protect the environment upon which people's lives depend. So I see signs everywhere that that people want a whole new redesign here, and I'm so pleased. I mean, the only way our voices can be heard is when we're covered by the media, so I'm so pleased that you've provided this venue for us to have this conversation.
Well,
what's going on?
Yeah, I happen to be, anybody who listens to the show regularly knows that I kind of lean that way, and it's just, these are important issues for me, and that's why I cover them. I mean, one of the things I've been covering here in Illinois that is related, and you mention it in your materials, is that is the frack sand mining. I mean, this, what happens is we have to have, when we have fracking, we have to get the sand for it. And Illinois happens to have some of the best frack sand in the world. And the county of LaSalle is being turned into one big open pit. In fact, they issued a moratorium on frack the new frac sand mines, and we discussed it, I believe, just the other week. And that's sort of it's an offshoot of
it's
what
happened. It's an offshoot, and Illinois is really going to be hit hard because it has shale reserves and frac sand. Usually states have only one or the other. The LaSalle area is following the lead taken by citizens in eastern Minnesota and western Wisconsin, who are also in some cases declaring moratoria, and when the sort of normal political apparatus doesn't allow them to do that, to actually engage in acts of civil disobedience and nonviolent action to try to stop the build out of these frac sand mines, which, as you suggest, are essentially strip mines. And so, in other words, in the places of our heartland where we don't have shale, you're still not protected from this industry, because if your bedrock is sandstone, they're coming after you. And the idea here is to build open pits that blast the sandstone into grains of silica sand. Silica is a very strong material, and so these grains of sand, we talk a lot about water and, you know, being the agent of fracking, but it's actually these grains of silica sand, because what happened if you fracked without sand, if you just sent water and chemicals down the hole, as soon as you released the immense amounts of pressure, which can exceed, in some cases, 10,000 pounds per square inch, so it's like sending down kind of a fire hose, right, of pressurized water. But as soon as you release that pressure, all those cracks are going to close back up again, because the weight of the earth, a mile or more above it, is just going to press them closed. If you use the water, however, to blast grains of silica sand into the cracks that you've created, then you've got like little doorstops that are forevermore going to hold these stony doors ajar, so that from now until eternity, you have cracks held open by grains of sand, and the gas will, and whatever else is in there, including radium, including arsenic, including benzene, all kinds of nasty things are trapped inside geological deposits at that depth. They have now a route to escape and find us up here at the surface. And that's how we keep the gas flowing. In other words, we use the sand to keep the cracks open in the fractures that we create, so the gas can continue to flow to the surface.
So even once those wells are abandoned, the cracks will stay open and continue to leak these substances.
Right, and so we can plug the well, so it can these volatile substances can no longer flow up it. However, what's a well made of? It's made of steel and cement. These are not immortal substances, right? They crack. Cement leaks. It crumbles. It shrinks with age.
Yeah.
And so you can create portals of contamination, not necessarily from the inside of the hole to the outside, but along the outside of the well. It's not bonded to the parent rock. And so as the cement begins to deteriorate, now you have fractures, openings from deep below up to the surface. So the idea here that I keep hearing from the oil and gas industry, that, look, we're fracturing thousands of feet below our aquifers, and there's nothing but rock in between the aquifers and where the area of economic interest here that we're fracking. All that's true, but by definition, but when you sink a well into it, you're going right through our aquifers, and you're connecting the aquifers to that underground formation. And the only thing that's standing as a barrier between all the toxic chemicals you just pumped in and all the radiation that they naturally contain and the overlying aquifer is this cement well casing. And how 5% of them leak immediately, we know that from good data in Pennsylvania. How many of them leak in 40 or 50 years when our kids are going to be our age now? And we don't know the answer, but it looks like that the slope of that line goes up pretty quickly. As many as 50% of wells that are 30 years old are already leaking in Pennsylvania. Is that typical? We don't know, but is that an uncontrolled experiment we really want to unfold for the people of Illinois? And people are saying no in Illinois. So what I'm going to be focusing on in my remarks when I come to Bioneers is not so much a description of the grim problem, but I'm going to start with the solutions. And I think when we talk about, like, how do we find hope in all this, I think I think that's where you create hope, is a focus on the solutions. Because once you see how needless this is, that there are other alternatives to solve the very real problems that we have in terms of energy. And then you take a look at what people are already doing. We don't really need to sink into despair here. I mean, it's ridiculous that we are engaging in strip mining for sand and a kind of sand, silica, that is a known carcinogen, right? That's the other thing I guess we should say here. Silica sand grains are kind of the Samson of sand grains. They have the ability to hold cracks open even when a mile of rock is pressing down on that sand grain. That's amazing. But it's not that inert when it gets into your body. If you should inhale a molecule of silica, we're not talking about a giant grain of sand here. We're talking about dust that's actually invisible to the human eye. But should you inhale it, that acts like asbestos in your lungs, and silicosis is the autoimmune disease that you might be at risk for, but lung cancer is another possibility. So now we are going to unleash all this new kind of air pollution in communities all over the river valleys of Illinois, all over Wisconsin and Iowa and Minnesota. Is that really the kind of development that we want for these communities?
And I think that the industry tends to downplay the silica. They really don't even talk about it. They have no safeguards. They don't even want to set up monitoring systems. I mean, a lot of the folks who are fighting against this are demanding that there be monitoring systems so we know what's going on. Now, you know, if I had my ways, we wouldn't build the mines in the first place. But the only way we can measure this is if we have data that shows us that we're at risk.
And you just hit on what's so frustrating for us in the scientific community. So, I mean, I would much prefer, as a public health scientist, to simply be able to research this. I would love to be able for someone to say, you know, Dr. Steingraber, we're considering doing this. Can you let us know what the environmental health risks might be? And then push the pause button and give us all of the scientists the data on what, you know, has already been done, and let us figure this out. But that's not what's happening. This is an industry that surrounds itself by secrecy, that refuses to play by the rule that all other industries have to play by. All industries now, if you're releasing inherently toxic chemicals into the common environment that we all share, which I personally think should be a criminal act, but let's say we've legalized that. But nevertheless, there are laws that say you have to tell us what you're releasing, right? And that's how I wrote Living Downstream. When I went back to investigate the cancer cluster in where I grew up and all the different toxic waste sites there, and including the bladder carcinogens in my own hometown drinking water wells, I was able to do that because of right to know laws and Freedom of Information Act. But this is an industry that's exempt from all that, that very carefully in 2005 received federal exemptions from all those laws. And so they surround themselves by this secrecy. They don't have to disclose what they're using. They don't have to adhere to our federal right to know laws. And so in some states, like Pennsylvania, even doctors have gag orders. And so they're not allowed to even tell the world that they're seeing patients that have sicknesses because of fracking, and if they want information on what the frackers are using, they have to sign confidentiality non-disclosure agreements. So how can science operate?
No,
how
absolutely.
Can we get public health data in a situation like that?
Yeah, Lisa Albrecht here has a comment.
One of the things that bothers me too about that is that, you know, not only are these doctors given the gag orders, but people who are in situations where there's nothing they can do for their family except sign these gag orders to say they're not going to talk about the problems that their family had, their farm had, their town had with water, or specifically with their own family's health issues, in order to get the money that they need to take medical care for their for the problems that have been caused.
Somebody who's lived on pittance their whole lives, and they're offered a big hunk of change, and they say, this is going to change my life. However, they're hit with that order where they can't reveal anything, and they take it because they desperately need the money.
And then there's the family in Indiana where their children are also subject to this gag order for the rest of their lives.
In Pennsylvania, that's right.
Pennsylvania.
I was actually part of the amicus brief on that case. Well, that that's one of the, I mean, just hit on one of my biggest frustrations, because in the absence of real data where we can actually go in and collect information, what we have are case studies, right? And so very often, I, in my capacity as one of the founding members of Concerned Health Professionals of New York, might testify in front of our own state house or bring to a press conference people who have been harmed, or bring them into a radio station and have them tell their story on the air. And one by one, some of the people who had very compelling stories to tell have let us know that they can no longer do that, because now, in order to finally get a supply of clean water to their home, they had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, and they could no longer say a word about anything that just happened to them. So they're not only harmed, but they've lost their ability to tell the story. Mm-hmm. That they've been harmed. And in the case of the family in Pennsylvania that you mentioned, even their 7-year-old child, for the rest of her life, cannot talk about what happened.
I mean, I wonder how can you do that? How can you put that on another human being who had nothing to do with the decision and say you were not? I would tend to think that that's unconstitutional and should be taken to court.
That will be determined. And then, nevertheless, the brazenness that it even happened at all, I think, tells us that this industry kind of will go to no lengths to simply throw its weight around and get its way. I mean, this industry wants to use our land as its factory floor. And this is, again, what makes this industry so different than any other industry I've ever researched in the 20 years I've been doing this. There's no zoning here, right? It's not like a factory that sets up in an industrial zone outside of your community. This is an industry that uses your land, it leases your land and my land, and the only way it can be profitable, because there's just not that much methane, which is natural gas, or oil, in the shale in any one place. We're not going to hit a there she blows geyser anymore. We've burned through all the big pockets. So now what we've got are tiny bubbles of oil or gas dispersed laterally through tight rock formations, and to get them out, we have to blanket the landscape with wellheads and compressor stations and brine pits and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to get a little word in here, Sandra. We need to remind people who we're talking to, and that's Sandra Steingraber, who is an activist, nationally known author, scientist, and she appearing at Great Lakes Bioneer Chicago Conference. And by the way, the name of the conference is Celebrating Community Resilience. The conference is November 1st, 2nd, and 3rd at Roosevelt University. You can go to bioneerschicago.org to get more information. And Sandra will be giving the keynote talk on Friday called The New Abolitionists of Illinois and Their Fight Against Fracking. Now, I do want to get into that conversation. I also want to get into the concept of toxic trespass.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well,
it's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and we're talking to Dr. Sandra Steingraber about fracking and her appearance coming up at the Bioneer Chicago event on the 1st, 2nd, and 3rd of November. And I played that song, Sandra, because you're being positive here, so I'm going to try to keep in the positive theme.
Well, I'm a cancer survivor. I think I learned how to have hope in times of great desperation. I tend to... And my father was also a World War II vet, and he used to quote Winston Churchill to me all the time, as in, you know, in defeat, defiance, and never surrender, and so forth. That's the kind of mindset I kind of bring to the issue, I believe.
My father was a World War II vet as well, and the one he always quoted to me was General Eisenhower's reply to the Germans when they asked for his surrender, I believe, at the Battle of the Bulge, and the answer was nuts. So... and I think that's how it goes. But let's go to the phones. By the way, 773-763-9278 is our phone number. Let's go to Wanda. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I live in LaSalle County, and my parents actually own a home. It's a rental home in Wedron. And the biggest industry in Wedron, Illinois, is the sand plant. recently, and there's not a whole lot of coverage on this at all, and my parents are kind of tight-lipped about it. They know that they cannot rent out their home anymore, even though that's part of their income in their 70s, and that's part of their retirement. There's actually been people who live in that town who have went to the bank, handed over the keys, and said, I'm not paying on this mortgage anymore. I can no longer live here. They are told not to drink the water. They are given water to drink, and the well, because it's all well water, the well water is so toxic. They don't really have a choice if you live in that town but to bathe in it, but they're told don't drink it. So I'm thinking, I know how this works. It seeps into your skin and you get sick, but they don't want to do anything about it. And it's all this back planning and we'll run more tests and we'll see where we're going and find out where this is from. And it's like, you know what, you're for lack of a better word, raping the land, and it's why we're having so many problems. My family are farmers. And to do this, to put it into the well water, it gets into our food supply, it gets into our water supply, and it's all for profit. Nobody cares about what happens to the person that gets sick and dies, and you bathe your baby in this, and it gets absorbed into their skin, and they get cancer and everything else. And it's what we're doing to our land that's preposterous.
Wanda, it's just a sad story, but what I have to ask you is about something that we talked about last week. I'm going to blank on the woman's name who was on Peggy, who went to a bunch of the meetings that the county's been having for the new master plan. It's not called master plan. I have to go look it up. But the idea is they had this moratorium on the sand mines, putting new ones in LaSalle County, and they want folks to comment on the new plan, and yet very few people are showing up at these meetings. And then you come on the air and you talk about this this very sad situation as if a lot of people know about this. What's your impression of that?
Not a lot of people know about this. They don't. Have you seen it in your local media? Have you seen it anywhere?
Well, I cover it, so I make sure I find out about it. But you're right. There's not a lot.
No, and I live out here. I don't subscribe to the local paper, but trust me, the local paper doesn't do a whole lot about it. But they don't talk about it. And I honestly think the people who do live in this town are so afraid that if they speak about these things, that what little help they're getting will stop. And you know, if you, like you talked about the gag orders and that type of thing, I ask my parents who have a home in this area, and they don't talk about it very often, but it's not, these public meetings aren't like they're broadcast anywhere. And I live close by, but it's not something I actually hear about it. I hear about it on your show because they don't want to talk about it because it's the biggest industry in that area. And they employ so many people, and that the sand plant does exactly what it's supposed to do. Their public image is, look, we give money to the domestic violence shelter. We help here. We help there. We're not the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and I think that goes back to some of my comments earlier in the show that the general public is just not aware that these issues are out there, that they need to be addressed, and that we all need to be standing up right now mm-hmm. against them. And
all right.
So they're out training for the marathon.
Yeah, well, let's not get into that. Wanda, by the way, it was a comprehensive land use plan was the phrase I was trying to come up with that's being debated right now in LaSalle County. I wish more people were like you, and I wish people would show up at those meetings and make their voices heard. There's an open house this Wednesday, October 16th, 4:30 at the LaSalle County Government Complex, 707 Etna Road in Ottawa, Illinois, room 250. If you cannot go online, I would advise you to go to my website, mikenovak.net, go to past shows, and the show for October 6th last week has the link where you can send comments in. And I urge people to comment because this is the only way we change this. And we change the laws that have been so destructive. And that's actually something I wanted to get into you with you, Sandra. But Wanda, thank you so much for the phone call. I'm so sorry to hear that about your parents, but you have to keep fighting.
Yep. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care. 773-763-9278 is our phone number. Sandra, this is pretty typical of what you see, isn't it?
It's a typical story. And sadly, it's the same script that's being pulled off the shelf in community after community. The industry kind of holds all the cards and knows what to say to kind of gain the compliance and to confuse people. And of course, the people there feel like it's a done deal. It's inevitable. There's nothing they can do. And so they allow themselves to become victims of what I call toxic trespass, in which your own health, your own economic well-being, because you've lost now the value of your property, it all goes. And you're left with none of the profits, but with all of the damage. Happily, there's a lot of old-fashioned political organizing going around all over the country, which is coming to Illinois, which is why I called my talk The New Abolitionist, because I actually want to profile the work of groups that are standing up against it. And one resource I might suggest for Wanda is a guy named Robert Naiman, who became a filmmaker after the frac sand company knocked on his own door. And he lives out in, hope I'm saying this right, Alamaki County in eastern Iowa. So he ended up doing a film called Frac Sand Land, which has gone on to win some awards, even though, you know, he didn't start off as like a professional filmmaker. Turns out he's really skillful at it. And so he's been traveling around with Frac Sand Land, helping different communities like in LaSalle understand the issues and know where the choke points are for this industry so that you can turn your fight-back spirit into something that's actually effective. So what we need is some kind of old-fashioned abolitionists who are going around from community to community, just like they did in Illinois during slave times, to convince people that, you know what, we don't have to run our economy on slave labor. We could redesign this. We don't have to reform slavery. We could actually do things differently and do away with slavery altogether, because it's a homicidal abomination after all, right? So that was a very proud role that Illinois played 150 years ago, and now I see these groups, not only Robert Naiman's groups, Alamaki County Protectors, which just won a big award for their work against frac sand mining in Iowa, but also right in Illinois, groups like Illinois People's Action in Bloomington and Southern Illinoisans Against Fracture.
Our environment.
They're in down in the Southern Illinois area.
Right.
They're really rising up and playing this incredible role. And so different communities who feel like they're just being run over by this machine and they don't know what to do. I guess what I'm saying is you don't have to reinvent the wheel. You can take the model and take all the resources that these other groups have already developed and then hit the ground running and be empowered by that.
You know, I had last week on the show another filmmaker, Jim Tittle, who did a film called
He did an amazing film, right?
Yeah, The Price of Sand. That's which is a wonderful film, and I urge people to take a look at that as well. And they had this meeting, they showed it this past Thursday, apparently had a really good turnout. So folks may be starting to wake up to this. But you brought up Illinois and where we are here, and that's a really good question, because we can't have this discussion without talking about the new fracking law in Illinois.
Yeah.
Your spring was very interesting. You went to New York. You did civil disobedience. You got arrested. You were thrown in jail for 10 days. You were on Bill Moyers. And then you came to Illinois with all that behind you to talk about the fracking law here, which you were dead set against because you wanted a moratorium in the state of Illinois, correct?
I did, and I was particularly animated in my feelings by the capitulation of organizations that should have been standing up against this industry, namely the Sierra Club and Natural Resources Defense Council and the Illinois Environmental Council, who played a role that I would say, using our father's experiences, I would say it's like Vichy France, right? They decided that getting run over was inevitable. They couldn't stop this. So they would work with industry behind closed doors in a cooperative way to bang out a very slapdash set of rules not informed by any science. There were no scientists at all, no public health people who there were no hearings. So this is a totally science-free bunch of rules It's just what they could get the industry to negotiate and agree to, not based on science, that would tell us, you know, how far a wellhead could be from a house, and what you could do with the waste when you were done and so on. And the environmental organizations thought that this was the best that they could get, and that was better than nothing. I disagreed strongly, as did these groups I call the new abolitionists, and believed to the contrary that the job of the environmental health community is not to help reform whatever crazy idea the oil and gas industry comes up with, but rather serve to help organize communities, talk to people and find out in the impacted communities what they want, and help stand and be part of the resistance movement to this industry. Because what happens is, by pretending that you're being realistic, like this is going to happen anyway, you're actually, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So you end up providing green cover for the industry. And that's what we saw in Springfield. I spent quite a lot of days in Springfield last May. And a legislator after legislator said, well, you know, Sierra Club has endorsed fracking. And Natural Resources Defense Council says that it's fine. And so it made a very confusing situation. And this was rammed through the legislature without, any consideration of what the science actually showed. So as a scientist, I was furious because I felt that science had been entirely cut out, especially having now lived in upstate New York and been invited over and over again to testify in our state house. We're taking a far more deliberative approach. And we doctors and biologists still feel like our voices are not really being heard. But at the very least, we are engaged in a process by which our governor is now commissioned a public health study of the environmental risks of fracking for people's health, and his decision to whether to move forward or not will be based on the results of that. We don't like the way it's being carried out. We don't think it has enough transparency and so on. But compared to what's happening in Illinois, where there's no science that was done at all, it's sort of a model of enlightenment, I guess. I felt so bad for my home state of Illinois that I felt I needed to come and bear witness to that.
And you called out Attorney General Lisa Madigan as well.
I did. I was so disappointed in her. And I say that as somebody who is following her career. And, the Madigan's family has been part of my life since I was 11. Her father was first elected when I was in sixth grade in downstate Illinois. So anyone who grew up in Illinois knows the Madigan family. And Lisa herself, she's ambitious. She's smart. She's also adopted like I am. And so I feel just interested in her as a person and her own life story. And has, I think, genuine interest in the environment, but she entirely came down on the wrong side of this issue, and I think was hoodwinked along with everyone else.
Now, I'm kind of surprised that in all this, I don't see the governor being called out on this. I haven't heard it from you. I haven't seen it anywhere else. I am painfully aware. Well, you just mentioned working with Andrew Cuomo. Where's Governor Pat Quinn in all this? I mean, he hasn't protected Starved Rock State Park, and he certainly hasn't said word one, as far as I can tell, about the fracking law, except to sign it. I mean, he does have the power of the veto, so where was the governor's office in all this?
Well, that's a really important question. I'm actually glad you brought that up. And it's important to emphasize that whether we're talking about Attorney General Madigan or whether we're talking about the governor, the job of these people is not to help certain industries rake in ever more profits. Their job is to uphold the safety and welfare of people and protect them against things that they can't protect themselves against. And so where is our governor? Where is our attorney general in this situation? They're on the wrong side of history. And this was a very personal message that I did take to Attorney General Madigan's office last May as an adopted person, actually. I mean, as somebody who was a ward of Illinois, the state of Illinois, as an infant and was adopted out, I feel very aware that somebody in the government of Illinois took care of me at a time when I couldn't take care of myself. I mean, what more vulnerable citizen is there than an infant that's been abandoned by her parents at birth and left in the hospital, right? So the state of Illinois had to find a family for me, and they found a really good one for me to grow up in Tazewell County, Illinois. And that's their job, is to look out for people when they can't look out for themselves. And that job extends to toxic trespass. It's their job is to protect people from toxic chemicals that profit-making industries would like to put into our air, food, and water in order to just, as someone said, rape the land and go. And if that is raising risks for our health and contaminating the water, which is, after all, we're all 65% water. You can't opt out of drinking water. If it ruins our property value so we can't even leave our house and we have no choice but to hand our keys into our mortgage lender and flee in the night, then we have a problem that government needs to address. So I'll go ahead and echo your call. Where is Pat Quinn in all this? Whose interest is he protecting here?
That's a good question. I think we need to wrap this up, but I do love the concept of toxic trespass, and I'm going to probably steal that from you and use it on the show. As you've written, you write about William Blackstone's commentaries on the laws of England, and him saying that trespass to land involves a wrongful interference with one's possessory rights in real property, and he translated the Latin as, "For whoever owns the soil, it is theirs up to heaven and down to hell." But in modern times, we can have that taken out from under us. We can, people frack right under your land, and you have no say about it. They can pollute the air above you, and you have no say about it.
It's strange. And in fact, if you actually Google the term trespass and look and see what Wikipedia says about the laws involving trespassing, it will actually say that horizontal hydrofracking has an exemption to the trespassing laws. In other words, if anyone else wants to tunnel under your house, that would be an act of subterranean trespass, unless you're a fracking company, in which case you can do that, and it's yet another law that you're exempt from, right, the trespass law.
Yeah.
So I use the word toxic trespass in a much larger way, of course, to refer to the idea
Yes.
that we're all, our bodies are these repositories for toxic chemicals, and we didn't consent to that, so we're being contaminated without consent. That's what toxic trespass is. But in fracking, it actually, we can even put a finer point on that, because
Yeah.
they are literally trespassing onto your property, injecting it with toxic chemicals, and if those toxic chemicals should waft up into your basement and get inside your own blood serum, there's not a lot of recourse under the law that you have. That's why I feel so frustrated as a cancer patient, as a biologist. There's sometimes you just have to start a citizen movement and just stand up and say no, this isn't right, and holler until redress of grievance is brought. And that's, I think, the point that we're at here in Illinois. Illinois was dealt a very bad hand by all the state government folks, from the governor to the attorney general's office, is supposed to be protecting us, all the way to the environmental organizations who kind of shot some squid ink into the water and confused the whole issue and rolled over and went along with this. And that leaves it up to us to stand up and say, you know what, if we have kids that we want to leave this earth to, leave our home to, be able to drink the water, it's our obligation now. We have a duty to stand up and say no.
And that's a good way to put it and it. Sandra, I will see you on the 1st of November. She will be the keynote at the Great Lakes Bioneer Chicago Conference on November 1st. The conference goes through the 2nd and the 3rd, and you and I will be on the water panel together, and I'm looking forward to it. You have a wonderful Sunday, okay?
Well, thanks a lot. And if today was any indication, you'll do a great job keeping me right on track.
I'm doing my best.
And if any of your listeners want to hear me before that, I'll actually be at St. Ambrose College on the 22nd of October, which is right in the Quad Cities on the other side of the river in Davenport, Iowa.
Sounds good. Well, I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.